Good evening, everyone. Thank you. Welcome to WILL's Community Cinema Screening and Discussions. I'm Henry Radcliffe, Community Engagement Producer and Community Cinema Series Manager at Illinois Public Media, WILL Radio, TV, and online. We are joining people in over 100 communities across the nation as we come together to watch and discuss tonight's film, The State of Arizona. Public television is known for our high-quality independent documentaries, and tonight we hope we'll maintain our reputation for bringing cinema out into the community to watch and enjoy, but also engage in meaningful discussion about local connections to the issues in the film. In order to do that, we have assembled a panel for tonight's discussion. We have Ricardo Diaz of the CU Immigration Forum, Angelica Sanchez of La Colectiva, Joanna Perez, a U of I sociology grad assistant studying undocumented immigrant young adults in the U.S., and Stacy Harwood, U of I assistant professor in urban and regional planning. And of course, we are grateful for our partners, the Spurlock Museum, who provides us with the night auditorium for our screening, and our national partner, the Independent Television Service, who brings the community cinema series to all of us public television stations and provides us with quality independent documentaries to air every week on WILL-TV. Our partners for this screening are CU Immigration Forum, La Colectiva, and Allies of Faith. Tonight's film will not be shown with closed captions, but we still have Bunny Berg here to help deaf audience members. I would like to thank DRES, the Office of Disabilities, Resources, and Educational Services, for making Bunny Berg available for us. Tonight's discussion will be recorded by Mike Pritchard. The State of Arizona will air on WILL Television Monday, January 27th at 8 p.m., please check our schedule for additional screening dates and times. And now we will start tonight's film. As the credits are finished rolling, could our panel members please come down and take their seats? So what did you think of the film?
Well, thank you.
And to get our discussion started, I would like to ask my panel to start at one end and introduce yourselves and give us your opinion or say something a little bit about the film.
Which end are we going to start? Okay, well, I'll start. I'm Stacy Harwood. I teach in the Department of Urban and Regional Planning here at the university. And my research focuses on, I look at local policymaking in communities that are growing because of immigration. So this film is obviously very interesting for me to see. There's actually been a lot of these kinds of pieces of legislation passed across the U.S., both at the local and state levels. So this kind of gives you a glimpse into what it does to a community. I like the film. I've seen a lot of films like this, and it's hard not to get sort of emotionally pulled into it, and all the tension created within the community, and you know, really, kind of makes you wonder why. It plays the extremes a little bit, but you know, it makes you wonder what the motivation is behind. These kinds of SB 1070, it seems like it's never really talked about. It's always sort of underlying the conversation. So didn't really get at that. That would be the one kind of critique I have of it, sort of the racist piece or the sort of like not really about immigration but not wanting Mexicans and using the sort of undocumented language as a mask for deeper issues. So.
My name is Ricardo Diaz, and which part of my background could I share with you? I was born in Mexico, raised in New Mexico. I've been in universities across the states. And contrary to my first emotional reaction in both empathy and sympathy. I feel very much like the rancher. I've lived there. I lived there most of my life, and my family's still there. Every time I go to the border, so many things have changed, and at the same time, so many of the feelings are in my house, in my relatives. I mean, I have Border Patrol agents in my family. I have undocumented in my family. I have many of us have married, you know, Lutherans from Minnesota, from Ohio, from, you know. And so we, in our family, we have these discussions as a normal basis, but we still eat together and get through the pain of the cycle. I see this very much as a cycle that happened 150 years ago, 120 years ago, 100 years ago. And so both, I fit many of the profiles in the film because I am an immigrant. I am Latino. There's so many things that just hit home as I watch it, but my initial reaction is, as I was telling Stacy right there, I can feel for Sheriff Joe, even though I'm not supposed to, given my other backgrounds. So we'll get back into that.
Hi, my name is Joanna Perez, and I'm a PhD candidate in the Department of Sociology. And my research actually focuses on activism among undocumented immigrant young adults in particular. And so for me, this film, I think one of the important things that it does is to put a human face to the actual issue and what's going on. And like Dr. Hartwood mentioned, you know, this is not something that's just happening in Arizona, but it's happening across the nation. And so for me, I'm particularly interested in the activism portion of it, for example, through the Puente movement and what they're doing and their initiatives to fight against things such as 287G secure communities and other groups that are doing that as well here in Illinois and across the nation.
My name is Angelica Sanchez, and I'm a senior in urban regional planning. The way the film related to me was, I would say I have a bunch of friends and myself as organizers around the issue. For example, I had a few friends who actually went down to Arizona to protest. I was supposed to go down, but I wasn't able to raise funds to go down. I feel that the film was able to also put a face to what was going on, but it also gave the perspective of both angles rather than just one. And as mentioned before, that isn't just happening in Arizona, but for example, Georgia. I know that was a big issue there as well, and it's I would have liked them to possibly mention that about Georgia and like other locations, but during the time, that was the main location.
Now, this is a discussion between all of us, and we are recording it, and there is a microphone in the audience for audience participation. So please join in. Microphone is coming.
My name is Sandhu. I'm a local resident. I've lived here for 55 years. Since nobody wants to say anything about it, I'll start. I'm an immigrant, but I'm also a human being. And the hard part is the humanity of the thing. What do you do to allow people to do what they want and to express their culture without being threatened by it? That's what's really it's all about. And of course, the economics. This is not just an American problem across the Mexican border. This is a problem all over Europe. It's a problem in Australia. It's a problem in India, where people from Bangladesh are coming across in hordes. And it's going to be a problem of horrendous proportions when the water level rises in the seas, because there will be 130 million Bangladeshis that will move to India. It's going to be something we haven't even imagined yet. So what we need is better human beings, and that means education. And it's slipping.
Let me respond to that for a second, because the Immigration Forum is a group of many different types of people, but one of the subgroups is the Allies of Faith, and it's a group of clergy and churches that deal precisely with that. Ultimately, it's humans. Ultimately, in all religions, we just published an ad in the Gazette stating the official religious the position of many religious organizations, and in this one we're all united. You know, it is very much humans, and as people of faith, we have to reconcile our own fears, our own situation, economic or emotional, and we have to deal with it in the actions that we take, be they political, be they charitable. If we don't, we, as we saw several people in the film, the conflict freezes us or pushes us into only one of the channels, you know, and it can be the anti, the, you know, you can go with your fears. And that's probably the most damaging, I think, because across the world, I'll never forget, I was in Brussels in a conference of about immigration, and there was this lady from Nigeria who lived in Paris who worked with immigrants, and her face expressing these, she says, all I'm working for is le droit, you know, the rights, the right to migrate, the right to stay. You know, in so many countries, you can't stay. You are forced out. The right to return, she said it. And she listed a series of rights that were just human rights. When you're forced out of your house, of your home, because of climate or economic conditions, where do you go and why? Do you really want to leave? But when you're ready to go back, in many countries, you can't go back. And so all those reminded me, put me into the context of we don't have it just here. In fact, we Mexicans have it easy, if you will. We can cross the border by walking, even if it's the desert. But what happens to my Chinese friend who's been in a container for 45 days and it has cost him $1,000 a day to cross? $45,000 at minimum wage is no easy, surmountable payment. Not for yourself, but if you could have that for your children, would you do it if you knew the condition back home would never allow them to go any way, any further than that little shack? I have learned over time in this movement, I have kids, and I would do what it would take, whatever, my life too, if it would make my children have a prospect of a better future. And I don't say that lightly, because I do believe in borders and following legality as much as you know, in my everyday life. But for my kids,
one of the things that I saw missing in the film and missing in much of the dialogue that we're having about this is credible, analytical information about what some of these effects really are. There was some quotes about how much money they're spending on educating children of undocumented people, et cetera, and how many jobs are being lost, et cetera. But if you do the kind of credible analytical kind of research that would give the information to people about what these effects really are. Now, I'm not so naive as to think there won't be a significant emotional part of this that will guide how people vote. But there are a lot of people who really are confused about what the effects of some of these actions are. And we don't have nearly enough of that kind of information going around. Maybe it's just the professor in me, but that's really badly needed in the civil discourse, and we just don't have it. It wasn't in the film, and it isn't in a lot of the discussions that we have. And that's something that I think we owe ourselves as a democracy to be informed as possible about some of these issues in a more credible way.
I can say a few things about that. I think there's some facts that people agree with across the board. One is that the U.S. as a whole, the national economy, benefits from immigration. That, you know, depending on how you slice and dice the numbers, most of the different research groups out there are saying, you know, the U.S. economy benefits in a positive way from immigration. Now, where the variation is if you get down to the local level, some places, it's the numbers of people, actually. It's not really about documentation or not documentation. It's just that some places there is a cost and some places there's a benefit. So the sort of expense, if you want to look at the cost, it's uneven across the U.S. And I think that's where things get a little harder to measure. You know, how do you measure costs and benefits and so on? But the stuff that I've read pretty much across the board, you know, U.S. as a whole gains economically, but it varies when you get down to the local level. And it has to do with numbers of people. And, you know, so whenever you have population growth, it does cost. People cost money regardless of your citizenship status. Mostly what it is the way that cities operate is they get most of the revenue from business, and then they take all that tax revenue and they put it into resident services. And so when that gets imbalanced, where you have more people and you're not getting enough tax revenue, it's going to cost money, and that's where people start getting upset. But it really isn't about the immigration documentation. It's the number of people. So, you know, those are the things that people agree with. Yeah,
I think just to add to that, and the numbers for and against immigration, especially the undocumented, if you go on the economic side, the two major studies that have been done, North Carolina and Texas, are very clear that there's a net gain. That is, even if you take into account the school taxes and being in schools, people having to go to the emergency room because they can't get preventive care or whatever else, all those costs included in the two major studies, and the treasurer of Texas I think he may not have been as happy with the results of the study because they wanted to prove that at the time, it was 2 years before the election, of the presidential election. But the numbers there are economic gain. Mm-hmm. Because you start counting how many people does it take to be in the back of the restaurant or doing the busboys, but you still need a manager, you still need the other people. The other people are buoyed up by the underclass of physical laborers. But you also have to take into account the immigration of the type that is I feel it in this town too, maybe even more than I felt it in Philadelphia, because in Philadelphia I had more than two choices for hospitals. But we also have a high immigration rate at the top end, very highly educated. And, you know, it's in your doctors, it's in your dentists. We all have to confront that when we have to deal with our health plan. And those are also positive benefits. The kinds of companies that come with immigrant investor visas, those also have to be taken into account into the whole immigration debate. But if you only count the undocumented, the real studies have said it, and the consequences of the Senate bill that got passed when the office, GA, what's it called? Well, when the economic repercussions of the Senate bill that passed, it ended up to be way higher. General Accounting Office, GAO, it's a net gain to legalize them too. And so when it comes to the economic terms, most business people will talk about it. Yes, there is a, I think you mentioned that there is a displacement of workers. It is true that, and I speak for the undocumented because those are the numbers I look for most. It is true that low-skill labor is impacted by the undocumented because that's what they can get. If you have no English, you're going to be limited to the number of jobs you can do. The service sector, then, you do bus tables and you don't become the waiter and you don't become the manager because that requires English for the system. So for me, even when you consider the undocumented, the economic impact is positive. The argument isn't in those numbers necessarily because the other side will talk about, you know, all our schools and whatever else. For me, the facts also have to do, for example, and again, speaking Latinos, in Illinois, 90% of the Latino kids growing up in Illinois are citizens. 90%. 25% of the kids in school presently in the state of Illinois are now Latino. Well, 24%. We're not quite at 25%. People have to understand that there's a demographic shift, and yes, it's unsettling. It would be unsettling for me as a Mexican having Indonesians, as I did in South Philly, moving in. What? My world is changing. Now at my stores, I found something else. All that is true. But the numbers on the economic side and then the demographic shift have to be considered in the context of I am living in a different world than I grew up in. And everybody has to admit that, and everybody has to face it and say, do I want to live in my bubble or do I move with what the world's giving me?
At the risk of being redundant, you know, I think the data are hard to come by. Sure, they're important, but how do you pin that down? And a lot of that depends on who's collecting the data. I would say from my own limited perspective that certainly aliens are contributing a lot in the way of taxes, and they don't get any deductions because these things are collected from their salaries by the employers, and they pay sales taxes and all of the taxes wherever without any of the rebates. So that's never been a real serious issue for me. I'm having something of a deja vu by dint of the fact that I spent the better part of, well, I was 2 decades in Southern California, most of which was at the end of the 20th century. And prior to that, I guess I'm partially informed by spending 2 years as a Peace Corps volunteer in French West Africa. And you talk about being out of your element. I definitely was there, and I went through checkpoints where they would check my ID and see the how everything was. And that was just always uncomfortable. You know, and I knew I was the odd man out. I knew I was the one who would get singled out. You know, I came out of there feeling like I glowed in the dark. But years later, and I think it was in 1990, we had, and I won't even mention parties, but Pete Wilson was running for governorship in California. I believe that was in 1990. It was the first time. And he was a big proponent of Proposition 187. And I was, you know, I went back to my previous Peace Corps experience and was thinking, oh my gosh, how would I feel if this type of thing was going on in Niger when I was down there? And I just, you know, I had a real visceral reaction to that. And I knew I was in La Mesa, California, which is just right around San Diego, 12 miles north of the border. And I had a real positive sense of what Mexican community, immigrants, the workers were doing in San Diego. They were wonderful. They really, they contributed, and you could see it. They were learning the language. They were doing a lot of the work and doing it with a lot of alacrity. So I figured this is a no-brainer. 187 is going down. But Pete Wilson went for it, and there was a fear element that I didn't even see it. But it passed, and that was the issue that brought enough people to the polls to elect Pete Wilson governor of California. And he did the same thing all over again. I can't remember what it was in 94, but there was another proposition, and it brought his people out to the polls, and there he was. Mm-hmm. So that's how I understand these things, and it's been tough to watch. It, just this evening, I need to turn over the mic, but those are the perspectives that I bring to this gathering.
Hi, I came as an international student. I have lived, worked, gone to school here for 30 years, and I kind of can see both sides of the stories. And I definitely sympathize with the undocumented. But here I am kind of confused. I have kind of two concerns here. First of all, why can't we just focus on the legal issues of the people who broke the law and came here? I can understand that the kids are, you know, in a very kind of miserable conditions, but who brought them to this state? I mean, when people decide to come to this country illegally, do they know the consequences? And when they spend thousands of dollars to come to the States and hide in a box to come to the States, couldn't they have used the money for something else, or they didn't know the consequence and we have to take them in just because they suffered enough and spent enough money? So when the legal issue becomes a racist issue, it's kind of very uncomfortable for me, because it's like saying it's okay if they broke the law because, oh, look at these kids. No, these poor kids. What are they going to do? So that's one concern. Why isn't this just a legal issue? And I can certainly understand, but I'm kind of thinking, where do we draw the line, you know, to make it just like legal issue? That would be really simple. But my second concern is that we are right now focusing on either deporting the people or making illegalized. But what's in between? Are people doing anything at all? You know, first of all, we make the people in law enforcement bad people, because they are taking the law. They're saying, like, look, if they come here illegally, we need to take some action. Now they become bad people. Now, secondly, if we don't do anything right now, can we kind of anticipate what is going to be like in the future? More illegal people coming to the state just because, oh, in 20 years, there will be a lot of kids who have no place to go. If we don't resolve this right now, we are going to deal with this in the future too. So these are my concerns.
Well, I think the issue is greater than just within the United States. We should be asking why people feel like they have to come over here. For example, NAFTA, other global exchanges between other countries and like the economy and all that, there's bigger issues within that itself that forces people to migrate to place to place. And then another issue is that what was mentioned in the film is that, and you had also mentioned, sir, the fear tactics that are being used by politics or politicians. I feel like that's just completely, it's overshadowing what the real issues are. It's it's more complicated than just legal, constitutional legislation, but it's also moral, ethical, because people are people. They're not just numbers, if that makes any sense. But yeah, there's so much going on with it that we have to stop looking at specific things, and some emotions should be taken out of it to be able to see it more rationally from different perspectives other than just our own. So, I don't know.
I want to address at least part of what you've brought up, because the first one, the rule of law and people breaking the law. The second one, I think, is easier because there are a lot of in-between solutions that are being considered and other countries are also doing. And the fact is that debate gets polarized into one or the other, but certainly there are many middle-of-the-road options. Because this is cyclical. It was 100 years ago, it was 20 years ago, and it will be here 20 years from now because people are people. People migrate. That's a fact of history. Everybody, whether it's the beginning of this country, the middle of this country, the recent history of this country, and the near history, you know, future of this country. So for me, we're going to have to be dealing with it over and over again because no one has gotten it right. But as far as legality, number one, laws change. Number two, when we are talking about laws of the immigration type, they have changed and will continue to change according to the political wind. Right now, anyone living in New Mexico that has Mexican ancestry is an American. It wasn't so by, you know, in 1848, or actually 50 years later when the border changed between Mexico and the U.S. with the Gadsden Purchase. That is, there are people and the line changed and now they were American before they were Mexican. I'm sorry, but the law is something that changes and therefore it's your choice when you want to apply which law. The other one, though, that I think comes to the U of I very closely, and that is we're a state university, which means if you live in Illinois, you pay a certain amount of tuition. If you come from Iowa to Illinois, you pay double that tuition. But if you're an international student, you pay triple that tuition, correct? That's just the way the state university is run. It depends on where you come from. If anyone in Illinois had to pay triple the amount of the present tuition, any resident of Illinois, how would that feel? And which socioeconomic level would come to the University of Illinois? That is only the elite. Yes, there are scholarships and whatever, but that's a very small percentage of the people that actually go to school. When it comes to international students, and I don't know what your situation was, ma'am, but it is very normal. The international students that come to University of Illinois are the upper class of their societies. Why? Because it costs so much money. Correct? And that, to me, is the huge difference when it comes to immigration. Because the kinds of people that are mobile across the world are the ones that can afford it. They are welcomed here, and so am I in France if I bring in lots of dollars. Any Mexican that has lots of money to pay for a tuition here is able to come. The fact is that there are many people that have no option as to how to migrate legally. They walk across because they have no option. Do you think anybody, I've known people that have walked 28 days across that desert in the winter. You think it's cold here in Illinois in the winter? I dare you to be out there with all that beautiful sky and that wind coming at you. People don't want to do that. They are forced to do that. The one part that this film did not cover well enough is that the drug demand on this side is high enough for people to be walking across with drugs and putting it in whatever way to bring it in. We have a drug problem in this country, and it is being fed by choices of people here which creates a demand, which brings all kinds of other dynamics, including economic ones and including human people walking across. But when it comes to immigration and legal and illegal, an immigration law is a civil violation. A civil violation in some of our states, it's illegal to divorce or leave your spouse or sleep with somebody else that's not your spouse. Those are civil violations too. Why don't we follow the law? Why don't we follow the law about every one of us that gets pulled over and doesn't pay a ticket right on time? Class 3 misdemeanor here, if you're an immigrant, you're going to go to jail. If you're a citizen, you don't go to jail. You pay your fine. Equality under the law, no. So legality is valuable, and legality is very, very specific to whatever time period you're in. That's my answer to that.
I just want to add.
I wanted to say just something about the fact of why don't they just come legally? And part of it is that our immigration laws are so broken that it becomes very difficult for many people to come legally. If you have to wait 15 or 20 years to get a visa, you probably are not going to come. So, I mean, one of the things we need to do is simply to change our immigration laws so that more people can come legally.
Yeah, but does that mean it is difficult just to
wait? Could you grab that microphone?
Sorry.
No, I mean, just grab it and go ahead and say what you wanted
maybe,
to say.
Maybe it is not right, but would you want to wait 20 years to come?
Can you two pass that microphone back and forth? Go ahead and talk in the microphone so that we can record it. That's one of my things.
Hi. One of the things that was pointed out was the dramatic increase in the arrests and deportation of people from this country by the Obama administration. And, you know, as a liberal Democrat, that's a terrible disappointment to me. And the answer, I think, was shown in the film when those a lot of gals were out there doing it too, were saying, vote. They were going door to door, making sure people got the vote out. And it's the Senate has passed an Immigration Reform Act. And, you know, I don't know if it's good, bad, or indifferent, but the press seemed to think it was fairly reasonable. The House refuses to do it. And if in Arizona they got the head of the Senate out, it seems to me that it's only through political action that, and, you know, you know, I don't get discouraged. I keep going to vote. I get discouraged, but I keep going to vote. But if Latinos would vote in their proportion, that I think that's what I think. Some of the two women here on the end, I think when they were introduced, I thought you were involved in some political action kinds of things, and I think that's going to be the bottom line. It's only through that political action at the local level that moves us to a reasonable immigration policy from the House.
I'll just make a comment on that. I actually think, I mean, that I agree political action is really important, but, I mean, one of the things that we're not hearing about is the influence of all the industry and these lobbying groups that they there's a they want undocumented. They're an industry who want to hire people at very low wages. And so they don't want to change the immigration laws. And we don't really talk about industry's role in this at all. But they're very much tied to immigration law and who we let in, who we don't let in. And, you know, the flow of immigration has been constant for, you know, a long time. And the only thing that varies is who's undocumented. It goes up and down based on what we want in our economy. So, you know, that's part of it. I mean, I do agree we need political action. We also have to look at why, even though there's so much pressure right now to have comprehensive immigration reform, still legislators are not doing anything. It's because I think their votes are bought by industry. You know, they want cheap labor. You know, and they don't want to fix the system.
So let me say, on the side of Latinos voting, actually Latinos and Asians, NACASEC, a Korean organization, and Mi Familia Vota, which we saw on this, are organizations that have done a great job of bringing people registered and then people to the polls. I don't think that the 2010 presidential election was the real flexing of the muscle yet. As you mentioned in Proposition 187, one thing that Wilson learned was you touch the wrong stuff and you do it for your gain, you're going to pay too. And I think Pierce in Arizona learned that, and I think that Brewer will eventually learn it. For me, that's one of those, you know, they're riding a wave, and they can ride the fear wave for a while, but it's gonna fall. I think you have to be not sensible to look at the numbers in this. You know, you can make it as political as you want. You can do it by party, or you can do it by local political leanings. You have to be crazy not to be looking at the brown people, the number of kids, the number of voters that are being just born every day and turning into 18 into actual voters every single day, and say, we're going to be nativist against it. Just if you want to believe, you know, that it's always light outside, you can do that. Just come in, you know, when that light is changing, and come inside and you say, yeah, it's still light out. But it doesn't erase the facts. The demographic facts are that things are changing outside. Their number of voters is changing. You can either incorporate, which I think the smarter politicians have started to look at when it comes to being negative, because it's not about Republicans. There's plenty of Republicans that have seen that light a long time ago and seen that it gets dark once in a while. And right now it may be their dark period, but they know, and they have made the right friends politically talking. But I think that it's a matter of time. And if we didn't win the immigration bill so far through the House, it's a matter of time. So you can choose to be with us or not. But from my perspective, I don't seek to persuade as to what the facts are anymore. If you don't see them, you're blind. Okay, hide. That's just. And I don't want to be mean or demeaning or disrespectful. That's just the way I see it. It gets dark. It gets light.
Me and my friends got together one day and decided to petition God to allow us to create a paradise. He said, "What do you want?" We said, "We want a country that is very successful." And he said, "What would the requirements for that country be?" We said, "Well, how about 100 million people, lots of oil, cheap labor, and put it next to the United States, because that's where the money is that we're going to get from them. And put it on the south side of the United States, because it's cold on the north side." He said, "You idiots, there already is a country like that. It's called Mexico. But it's the corruption that eats it. Till you eliminate the corruption." The idea that everybody would come to the United States, that's not going to work. We have to fix a system so that people can be happy where they are, not have crime, not have pollution, not have overpopulation, which we are very, very eager not to talk about. It's all about population, too.
I have to tell you, I come from the border. If all Mexicans wanted to come, it would not be very hard. The fact is most Mexicans don't want to come because of the weather, because of the food, because of the family, because of everything else. The ones that have a particular magnet to here will come, but most of us still want to go back home. If our home were like that, and if we could eliminate the things, and that's true. And let me tell you, we are fighting for that too. And every time that I've never forget one time we were going on a rally to D.C. and go visit our senators and whatever else, and one of the guys in the bus, Mexican, says, "Why are we going to the Capitol? We have to stop at the embassy, the Mexican embassy, and show them what our political power is." And in fact, I've been in little rooms in South Philadelphia in which the local election is basically decided by all the money that are all the ones that are putting in money into the election. And who are they? The residents of South Philly of Mexican origin that are sending money back home, and they decide who that president, that mayor is. I think it's happening. And maybe the crime warlords and whatever else, they're putting up a fight too, but I think it's changing. It used to be that the income, the salary differential was 10 to 1 for every dollar that you could earn in Mexico. You could earn 10 in the U.S. Now it's closer to 4 to 1. It's actually a lot of my family doesn't want to come. At that disparity, they're saying, you know what? I can put up with it. I don't have to go. As you say, I think that's valid. But it's not good enough yet. So many come.
This has all been very interesting. I just want to say a few things. There are so many factors here. The fear factor, historic, political polarization, human rights, a lot of other things that illegal, like this lady said, and so many. But I just want to talk about faith-based and the organization you mentioned, the Alliance of Faith, and we were very involved with the Interfaith Alliance and the Ministerial Alliance, and I think it's important for the leaders in the faith base to get more involved, because it's going to take the high ethics and to deal with this, to educate the people. To me, I was very, very involved in the political, the NAACP, and a lot of different organizations. And we need all of that, don't get me wrong. But I believe that if we educate the people in ethics and faith-based, because a lot of people believe in God and different people, that's why I say Interfaith Alliance. And the Alliance, I'm not very familiar with the Alliance of Faith, but I would like to know more about that, because I think in different areas we're going to have to get together and really educate the people about high-level faith-based things rather than political is fine, but we need faith-based ideals to try to go to the next level. I was thinking when we were talking about different things here about the illegals, and you hear so many things, and in watching that film, I was thinking going back 20, 30 years and our involvement, we fighting the same battles, you know, the African Americans and now the Latinos. There's so many battles and so many factors, but I think we need to go to a higher level, and that's where my interest is right now, to get together with people of faith to try to take it to another level and educate the people about just like not hate and not worry about my job, or they're going to take my job and all this. We can all work together in this. We're going to have to work together. And that's where I just wanted to say a few words in that regard.
I first want to say thank you guys for doing this. This is really interesting. I actually wasn't going to come today, but my Mexican cultures professor told me that I could get extra credit if I came. So no, but I'm really happy I did. Listening to the film and in listening to this discussion, there's been a lot of talk about fear, and I wonder how far that's justified. I don't know that it's necessarily fear that drives someone like Pierce or Joe Arpaio or their supporters. I think that they are just reading the tea leaves in some sense. I think that they're worried about safety and sustainability. They look at the failure of multiculturalism in Europe. They look at the displacement of jobs. They look at the violence. They look at the drug running. Look at the smuggling, the human smuggling. And they're saying, okay, something needs to be done about this. And I think one of the panelists mentioned, well, we don't really talk about the mindset behind these bills. I think that's right, because I think people are too busy caricaturing the other side. I think it's not helpful when we paint our opponents or someone's opponents as being deficient, and that's why they're putting forth these bills. And I think to the question about politicians, and I think you use the example of you can pretend that it's, you know, night outside all the time, but, you know, it becomes day. I would challenge that characterization. I think what we don't need is politicians who say, here's the wave, here's the way that everybody's going, I better jump on board to save my political skin. I don't think it's that they don't see that something's changing, but that they have a particular principle that's not going to change with the change of the political climate. So I think it's cliche to talk about dialogue, because we talk about talking about stuff all the time and nothing gets done. But if we're really going to get together at the table, at the proverbial table, and hash out these issues, one thing that is an absolute necessity is that we try to see the best and the people who disagree with us. Because if we're convinced that there's some kind of fear or deficiency in why they believe the thing that they believe, then we're never going to compromise, because we feel like we have the moral high ground. So that's just kind of what I was thinking.
I'm a son of an immigrant mother. My mother came over from Ireland 97 years ago. I agree with Ricardo when he says that human migration is a fact of history. That's very important. It's going on forever. Also that he said that the immigrant is forced to take this step. Sometimes the so-called illegal alien, which I think is an odious term, is really a dad who is courageously trying to support his family. Also, I think that one of the ways to get votes is to say that you have family values. I think many people in this story, in the film, have been elected because they have so-called family values, but the policies that they support are not family value policies when they break up families. I think that the protection of property, as important as it is not a greater priority than the protection of families. And then finally, Ricardo, I don't think I have sympathy with Sheriff Arpaio. He's a racist.
Thank you. I hope I'm not going beyond the scope of the meeting, but a few weeks ago, my worldview was really shaken by a program I attended at the Latino Cultural Center right near here on Nevada Street. And the presentation made the point that for hundreds of years prior to the setting of our southern border, the Native Americans, meaning the people of Mexico, have been traveling back and forth, north and south, for reasons of visiting family or agricultural opportunity or whatever, and that suddenly, what, 1850s, the border was essentially settled.
1846 and then 1848.
What's that?
1846 and then 1848.
Oh, you really know the history. And that these hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of Native Americans were not consulted. They weren't participating in this decision about setting the border. And these migration, these long-established migration routes were suddenly blocked. And that you could understand that these people would choose not to respect this border that they had no say in creating, and would find every, you know, over many, many decades, would find every means possible to continue following these routes. If anyone on the panel would like to comment, I'd appreciate it.
I'm part of that migration pattern, seriously. My family now is, I was born on the Mexican side. My mom was born on the American side, but she lived most of her life on the Mexican side. It was, I think, 1918, as recent as, you know, 1918, where our town, the town that I come from, well, the one next door, San Buenaventura, actually because of the Spanish flu, was depopulated, and they needed to populate it once more. And where do they bring people? Well, from Santa Fe, New Mexico, of course. They have a lot of people over there. They don't have jobs. We have jobs. They populated our... As a result, my great-grandfather, well, my great-grandmother had two sons, both named Jerónimo. One was born in San Buenaventura. The other one was born in what is now Mesilla, New Mexico. I have lived part of that migration because when somebody gets married, well, it depends who they married. If they married one on this side, then they're going to, you know, the wedding's going to be on this side, wherever, you know, you can get the most family. And the ones from Mexico come across, and we have a big party for 3 days. And then people go back to their houses. If the party's over there, actually the Americans are afraid to cover, you know, go down, but they still come down. We have a party for 3 days and then come back. It's not only human nature, but if you don't live, I mean, it's the border is... continues to be just an inconvenience rather than what they painted out to be with those fences. You know, why go through the fences when you can just go ride a car and do whatever you need to do to cross? One little part of the mentioned fact, I think, we have about 30 million immigrants in this country. 20 million of them are legal residents or citizens already naturalized. That is 30 million foreign-born, 20 million followed the law. The other 10 million people, 10, 12, whatever the politician wants to put, are the ones with problems because usually they couldn't do it. Out of those 10 million, a good portion of them are of Mexican origin or born in Mexico, let's say it, because they're foreign-born. Okay? 30% of those cannot fix their papers in any way according to present law. That is, they could not come even after 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. When NAFTA came into effect, that's the year that we also had a huge devaluation. Half of the money in your bank was cut, taken away like this. But your salary also was worth less, that is, by half. So not only did you lose half of your assets, but you also now earn half of what you were making. So you cannot recuperate from that. During that next year, then, 95, is when the lawyers, the sociologists, that's when I started getting them in my English classes because they couldn't make it back home. The radiologist is driving a taxi because that's the only job he can get. Because when the economy falls down like that, you've got to do something to feed your family. Never forget this one professor who said, you know what? This is the first year, he said, we were visiting in 96. I was taking a group of MBA students. He said, this is the first year in 96. He says that I haven't been pitched to on the first day of class by all of my students. And this was the elite university, business university. That is, his students would wait after class to pitch whatever ware they were making. You want a watch? You want a cup? I can make these glass, anything. Because everybody was desperate to just live. When the situation comes like that to even the middle class and the upper class, then you have a huge need for migration. After that, we went back to the economy of the U.S. is going up, and now we need more laborers, like you were saying. Then we started getting low-wage people coming in from the country again, from the rural areas. But for about 8 years, it was very much the educated. Talk about an economy going down and being debilitated. Mexico losing its lawyers, maybe not a big problem. But if you lose all your doctors and you lose your sociologists, oh, it's scary.
I think you also brought up a really good topic. You had mentioned that these laws are being created for individuals who don't even get a say in it. And I think that's just a big issue with the law itself, of how we create it for others, but we never really create it for ourselves, or we don't really abide by what we say others should do. And it becomes really complicated to create, I guess, to hinder someone else's life and to dictate someone else's life and to assume that they're going to abide by it and then criminalize them right after if they don't, when they never got a say in the law itself. It's a really complex topic of deviance and criminality and how we portray others and how we spin things and how we decide to tell the story for our benefit. Because as we mentioned before, a lot of these laws change in general, and they've been changing forever. And it's for the benefit of the United States to change the law to whichever way they want to do it, or for whoever it may be. And if you noticed in the film, how the Senate was, or in Arizona, they changed their vote to get the other politician out. But it was because a lot of the CEO members had sent comments and had said that this is a bad idea, and then everyone said, oh, okay, well, it's a bad idea. And that's what I mentioned before, that it's a larger global issue, I guess you would say, with corporations and all that, and why people have to move, or why people feel the need to go somewhere else where it's supposed to be better and things of that sort. Because when I went to South Africa, I was in the poorest, probably one of the poorest locations there, and all I could see were Coca-Cola signs everywhere. And then I go to California or Mexico, in two different locations, Coca-Cola signs everywhere. And I thought it was interesting that people don't have food, but yet Coca-Cola can manage to get their products out there. Coca-Cola could manage to get signs everywhere and to, you know, advertise that. But then we're talking about issues of immigration and who's paying who and why don't we get enough wages. And the student recently said, we were talking about wages and whatnot, and he had said that, well, we're all going to be crying or whining when a can of Coke is going to cost $5. And I said, personally, I wouldn't care for that, because I think the issue is that if we don't pay, the reason why things are low cost is because we don't pay workers properly, and these workers tend to be able, the companies are able to manipulate them because they are undocumented or because they have certain circumstances that they can manipulate. So the issue is so much more greater than just the law, if people are legal. And I don't even like using that word either. But yeah, it's just really, really complicated.
We've got another comment from the audience.
I have a question about immigration reform. I know this seems a little simplistic, but are they even discussing like a grandfather law for the immigrants that have been here in the United States for 10, 15, 20, 30 years? Is that even a possibility? Is that on the agenda for immigration reform? And I ask this because I have lived in and worked in Arizona for a number of years at the university. Well, actually for the Arizona Board of Regents as an internal auditor. And so I would audit the three state universities, and undocumented workers and undocumented students were also a point of discussion while I was there for a number of years. So I was curious and wonderfully excited to see that Peter Likens, the president of the University of Arizona, had signed that document that they showed in the film. But I just to go back to my original question, is that a point of discussion in the immigration reform laws? Is grandfathering?
I would say that is the starting point for it. As the Senate bill, as approved, actually does not grant citizenship to anyone until after a wait of 13 years. So no matter how long you've been here, that's your minimum waiting time. But who does it allow to get into that line, if you will, to wait 13 years? It is those people that have been here a certain period, okay? And that is a line in the sand that is very much inclusive of those people that have been here the longest, but not necessarily so. That is, in order to be considered and be put into that line, not only have you have to have been here a X number of days, years, and I'm saying it like that because we know that that's one of the points that will be negotiated if the bill ever gets further. The line will be drawn at 1 year, 5 years, 8 years, whatever it is. It is also a prerequisite that those people must pass a background check. And that means, for example, for the Dreamers, for the young people that are now in a kind of a quasi legalization process. I know DACA is not that. Don't, my friends, don't. I'm not misquoting it, but it is better than whatever. They have to pass a background check. That means they must not have committed a felony. They must not have committed a serious misdemeanor or multiple misdemeanors. That means, basically, they haven't messed up even once with the law. And then they can be considered, if they've been here long enough, to pay their taxes and to pay over. Right now, it's about $1,400 to get started in that process. And let me tell you, poor people, $1,400 is a huge amount. So yes, grandfathering, yes, with many, many obstacles. And with all due respect, I don't believe that the politicians are going to do anything that's expedient to the moral cause unless we force them to it in whatever way. And I would be remiss not to invite you then to join in the Immigration Forum. Next Tuesday at 5 is when we get together once a month. The Allies of Faith, actually, sitting right behind you, Father Royer and Claire, are members of the Immigration Allies of Faith. Carolyn was here too. They meet that morning, Tuesday morning. That group also meets. But in whichever way you want to account it, as a researcher, if you want to do it as a student of the Dream Act, as a person of faith, there are ways to discuss this, educate ourselves. Let me tell you, 8 years ago, I was not in this business. I was not advocating. I wasn't sitting on my hands. I literally thought everything was fine. Now that I've been informed, I can't sit on my hands. I have to come out and speak up and say something because we need to be educated and we need to do something about it. Wholeheartedly agree. In 20 years, we'll be here again. But hopefully it won't be me sitting here. It'll be the young people, because the young people have done so much more than us old fogies when it comes to the movement and the immigration reform. My respects to them because they put themselves on.
I'd like to go ahead and unfortunately call this an evening. Excuse me. We're a little bit past our time, but this has been a very good discussion, and I would like to thank our panel. I also want to thank the audience for coming out tonight, and our next screening is February 4th at 7 p.m., and the film that we will be watching is Las Martas. Thank you for coming out this evening, and have a good evening and travel safely.